A sloth, a donkey, and a curious human. Send a prompt and see what they're doing. One hits a record with a question on his mind. Two brothers pick it up, see what they find. Corn takes his time, Herman's got the facts. Back and forth, they never hold back. My weird prompts, come on in, that's where we begin. My weird prompts, glad you're here.
This episode was generated using artificial intelligence. Please verify facts.
Daniel sent us this one. He's picking up a thread we touched on in a previous conversation about signal lights, those specialty torches used for beacon signaling in rescue and law enforcement. His observation is that a much larger chunk of the population would recognize airport marshalling sticks, those glowing wands ground crew use to guide aircraft. And he's asking three things. How did marshalling sticks become a thing? What surprising contexts are they used in? And do different militaries have their own signals, or is there one standard set? It's a great question, because these things are everywhere, and nobody thinks about them.
Nobody thinks about them until you're sitting in a window seat watching a person with two glowing orange wands direct a 200-ton aircraft with hand gestures, and you realize there's no radio, no screen, no backup, just light and trust.
If that person gets it wrong, you've got a wingtip through the jet bridge.
Which is exactly why this seemingly trivial tool is treated with deadly seriousness. So let's define terms first, because there's a taxonomy here that most people blur together. A signal light, what we discussed previously, is designed for beaconing. It's about attracting attention across distance. A marshalling stick is fundamentally different. It's a directional command tool. You're not trying to get the pilot's attention with it. You already have their attention. You're giving specific instructions: stop, turn left, slow down, cut engines.
The difference between waving a flare on a life raft and directing traffic at an intersection.
And the physical design reflects that. A signal light throws a narrow beam as far as possible. A marshalling stick uses a diffuser to spread light in roughly a 180-degree cone, so the pilot can see the signal clearly from the cockpit regardless of the angle. If you used a bare flashlight bulb, the pilot would see a blinding pinpoint of glare from one position and nothing from 2 feet to the left. The diffuser solves that.
The diffuser is the whole game.
The diffuser is the whole game, and it's been the whole game for about 80 years. But the story starts earlier than that, and it starts on water.
Of course it does. Everything starts on water.
The direct ancestor of the marshalling stick is the naval signal lamp, specifically the Aldus lamp, invented in 1916 by Arthur Cyril Webb Aldus. It was a focused lamp with a shutter mechanism that let ships communicate via Morse code across distances where flags weren't visible. The key insight was that a directed light could carry precise information without sound. No shouting across the water, no radio frequencies to coordinate, just light and a shared code.
Which sounds exactly like what a marshalling stick does, minus the Morse.
The transition from sea to air happened in the 1920s and 30s as aircraft got larger and airports got busier. Early aviators used hand signals alone, but as planes grew, think the Ford Tremotor, the early Douglas airliners, the distance between the marshal on the ground and the pilot in the cockpit got too large for unlit gestures to be reliably visible, especially in poor weather or at dusk.
This was before ground radar, before standardized radio procedures. You had a guy standing in front of a plane waving his arms, hoping the pilot could see him.
Which is exactly the problem that led to the first illuminated wands. Ground crew started using flashlights with colored filters, but the glare problem was immediately obvious. A bare bulb with a red filter still creates a point source that's harsh and directionally ambiguous. The breakthrough was putting a frosted or ribbed diffuser over the bulb. Initially glass, later polycarbonate and silicone, that scattered the light evenly. Suddenly, the pilot could see the wand clearly from any position in the cockpit.
We've got diffused light wands being used ad hoc at various airports. When does this become official?
The inflection point is 1944. The Chicago Convention on International Civil Aviation established the International Civil Aviation Organization, ICAO. And one of the first things ICAO did was publish Annex 2 to the Convention, the Rules of the Air, in 1945. That document codified the first globally standardized set of marshalling signals. By 1950, the basic hand and wand signals, arms raised for stop, arms waving horizontally for slow down, arms pointing forward for proceed, were locked in and taught identically at airports from London to Singapore.
That's the version we still see today, more or less.
The core signals ICAO published in 1945 are still the ones marshallers use on tarmacs right now. The wands got brighter and cooler when LEDs replaced incandescent bulbs in the 2010s, but the gestures didn't change. A typical LED marshalling stick today produces 200 to 400 lumens, which is roughly equivalent to a high-end flashlight, but spread across that wide cone. The older incandescent versions ran hot, had short battery life, and were dim in daylight. LEDs solved all three problems at once.
The tool got better, but the language stayed the same.
There's a reason for that. The marshalling stick persists in the radio age specifically because it bypasses every failure mode of electronic communication. No frequency coordination, no language barrier, no electronic interference, no dead battery that kills the entire system. Each wand is self-contained. A marshal can guide a plane even if the radio fails, even if the pilot speaks a different language, even if there's an electromagnetic jamming environment.
Which brings us to the Tenerife example, doesn't it?
The 1977 Tenerife airport disaster, 583 people killed, the deadliest accident in aviation history, was caused in large part by radio miscommunication. A KLM pilot began his takeoff roll while a Pan Am aircraft was still on the runway because the tower and the pilots couldn't hear each other clearly through the fog and overlapping transmissions. You know what works in fog? A person standing on the tarmac with two glowing wands making unambiguous visual signals. Radio is great until it isn't. Marshalling sticks are the backup that doesn't break.
That's not theoretical. There was a British Airways A380 at Heathrow in 2023 that had a complete radio failure on taxi. They guided it all the way to the gate using only marshalling sticks.
A 370-ton double-decker aircraft guided by hand gestures. And it worked perfectly. That's the power of a standardized visual language.
Let's talk about that standardization, because that was part of the prompt. Are the signals the same everywhere, or do different militaries do their own thing?
It's mostly standardized, but with significant exceptions. The ICAO signals form the backbone, and NATO has its own document, STANAG 3117, which aligns very closely with ICAO. If you're a NATO marshal, your signals will be understood at any NATO airfield, but Russia and China use their own systems. Russia operates under GHOST R56480-2015, China under GJB1856-94. The gestures are different. Enough to cause confusion in multinational operations. A NATO slowdown signal is a horizontal arm wave with the wands held out. The Russian equivalent is a vertical dip of the wands. If you're a Western pilot landing at an airbase where Russian-trained marshallers are working, and you see a vertical dip, your brain might not register it as slow down, because your training drilled a horizontal wave into your muscle memory.
This actually happened, didn't it?
At the MAX air show in 2021, the Russian Su-57 stealth fighter was being marshaled by Russian ground crew using their distinct signal set. Several Western pilots observing from the flight line reported that they genuinely couldn't parse what the marshallers were telling the pilot. They recognized it was marshalling, but the specific meanings of the gestures were opaque to them.
Which is a problem if you're, say, a coalition operating out of a shared airfield.
Or an emergency landing at a foreign base. That's why, in practice, many international airports use ICAO signals regardless of their country's military standard, and why NATO runs joint training exercises where marshallers from different nations practice each other's signal sets.
There's a meta layer here. The signals are standardized enough that the system works globally for civilian aviation, but militaries retain enough variation that interoperability isn't guaranteed.
That tension between standardization and national variation is something ICAO has been navigating for 80 years. Every few years, someone proposes a single universal signal set for all military and civilian operations worldwide, and every time a few countries block it on sovereignty grounds. The marshalling stick, despite being a simple tool, turns out to be a surprisingly political object.
The Glockenspiel of national sovereignty.
I don't even know what that means, but I'm going to accept it.
We've covered the origin story and the standardization question. Let's get to the third part of the prompt. The surprising contexts. Because airport tarmacs are the obvious one. Where else are these things used?
The one that blew my mind when I first learned about it is aircraft carriers. The United States Navy's yellow shirts. The flight deck crew who direct aircraft movement on the carrier deck use illuminated wands that are essentially modified. Maglite flashlights with custom diffusers painted bright yellow so they're visible against the gray deck and the gray jets.
The noise level on a carrier deck is what, 140 decibels?
Jet engines at full thrust, steam catapults, helicopters, it's beyond what ear protection can fully mitigate. You physically cannot hear a shouted command. The wands are the only reliable communication channel. Every gesture has to be unambiguous and instantly understood because the margin for error on a carrier deck is inches, not feet. A misread signal can put a sailor into an engine intake.
The training for this is intense.
40 hours of training before a yellow shirt is allowed to wave a wand at a real aircraft. 40 hours of classroom instruction, simulator practice, and supervised on-deck training. And that's just the initial qualification. They recertify regularly. The Navy treats marshalling as a critical safety function, which it is.
40 hours to learn how to wave two flashlights around.
40 hours to learn a visual vocabulary where every gesture has exactly one meaning and there is zero tolerance for ambiguity. It's not about the physical motion. It's about the split-second decision-making and the absolute clarity of communication under conditions that are actively trying to kill you. Offshore oil rigs. Helicopter landing pads on rigs in the North Sea or the Gulf of Mexico are small. They're moving. The rig sways with the sea state, and the wind can be brutal. The helideck marshal uses illuminated wands to guide the pilot onto the pad, compensating for the platform's motion in real time. If the rig lurches upward during landing, the marshal has to signal an immediate correction or abort. It's arguably one of the most demanding marshalling environments on Earth.
Because the landing pad itself is a moving target.
On an airport tarmac, the ground stays put. On an oil rig, the helideck might rise or fall several feet between the moment you start your approach and the moment your skids touch down. The marshal is watching the sea state, the helicopter's descent rate, and the pad position simultaneously, and signaling adjustments with the wands.
That's terrifying.
That's Tuesday in the North Sea.
You mentioned film and TV production in your notes. What's the connection there?
1. When a film shoots an airport scene, they hire actual airport marshallers as extras because the gestures have to look authentic. You can't just hand an actor two wands and tell them to wave their arms around. It looks wrong immediately to anyone who knows the signals. 2. And this is the one I find more interesting, marshalling sticks are used on set to guide camera drones and light aircraft during aerial shots. When you've got a drone carrying a $40,000 cinema camera flying near talent, the drone operator often can't see the full environment. A marshal on the ground uses wands to guide the drone's position.
The same tool that guides a fighter jet onto a carrier elevator is also guiding a camera drone past an actor's face.
The same standardized gestures, the same diffused light wands, the same principle of silent visual communication. It's one of those technologies that's so effective at its core function that it migrates into completely unrelated domains.
Let's talk about night operations and the covert stuff, because that was part of the question about how you marshal without blinding the pilot.
So during daytime, you use bright orange or yellow wands because they're most visible against sky and tarmac. At night, you have a different problem. The pilot's eyes are dark adapted, and a 400 lumen wand at full brightness would destroy their night vision instantly. So modern marshalling sticks have dimmable outputs and interchangeable filters. At night, you switch to red filters and dial the brightness way down, typically to about 10-20% of daytime output. The red light preserves the pilot's night vision while still being clearly visible.
The covert military application.
This is the one that feels like science fiction, but is completely real. Some military marshalling sticks operate in the infrared spectrum. They're invisible to the naked eye, but brilliantly visible through night vision goggles. So you can marshal a helicopter or a stealth aircraft in complete darkness, with zero visible light signature. The pilot is wearing NBGs and sees the wands clearly. Anyone watching from a distance sees nothing but darkness.
You're guiding in a blacked-out aircraft to a blacked-out landing zone using light that only exists for the person wearing the right equipment.
The wands themselves look like ordinary marshalling sticks. The IR emitters are built into the same housing, often with a selector switch that toggles between visible and IR modes. The technology has been around since the 1990s, but has gotten dramatically better with the switch to LED-based IR emitters, which are smaller, cooler, and more power efficient than the old incandescent IR bulbs.
That's the low-tech solution to a high-tech problem. Thing you were going to mention.
The marshalling stick is a perfect example of a technology that's simple enough to work when everything else fails, but sophisticated enough to adapt to modern requirements. It's a diffused light on a stick. The core concept hasn't changed since the 1940s, but the materials, the emitters, the power systems, the IR capability, all of that has evolved continuously. It's low-tech and high-tech simultaneously.
Like a pencil that's also a laser.
That's actually not a bad way to put it.
Let me pull on another thread here. You mentioned the FII did a study on runway incursions and miscommunication.
In 2019, the FAI analyzed runway incursion data and found that 12% of incursions involved miscommunication between pilots and ground crew. That's radio miscommunication, verbal miscommunication, misunderstood hand signals. But here's the striking detail. None of the incursions in that study involved marshalling sticks.
Which suggests the sticks are more reliable than radios for ground direction.
For the specific task of directing an aircraft's movement in close quarters, yes. Radios introduce ambiguity, accents, overlapping transmissions, stepped-on signals, frequency congestion. Marshalling sticks are a closed communication channel. One sender, one receiver, no interference. The trade-off is bandwidth. You can only send a limited set of commands, maybe 30 or 40 distinct signals in the standard ICAO vocabulary. But for ground movement, that's all you need.
The bandwidth limitation is actually a feature, not a bug. You can't misunderstand a signal that doesn't exist.
There's no way for a marshal to accidentally say taxi to runway 27 left when they mean stop immediately. The signal set is constrained to exactly the commands that are needed, and every command is a distinct, unambiguous gesture. It's the communication equivalent of a fuse. It fails safely by limiting what can be communicated to only what's safe to communicate.
Who actually makes these things? Is there a dominant manufacturer?
The world's largest manufacturer is a German company called Wamtechnik, founded in 1952. They've been making marshalling sticks for over 70 years. Their wands are used at airports in something like 80 countries. But there are also specialist military suppliers, companies that make the IR-capable versions, the ones rated for carrier deck conditions, the ones that can survive being dropped from a helicopter.
Sounds like a company that also makes industrial pressure washers.
They probably do. German industrial firms have a way of making three completely unrelated product lines under one roof.
Let me try to pull this together into something practical, because the prompt was partly from a preparedness angle. If someone wants to improvise a marshalling stick, what do they actually need?
That's the entire secret. Any bright flashlight becomes a functional marshalling stick if you put a frosted diffuser over the lens. A piece of frosted plastic, a white plastic bottle cap, even a layer of frosted tape. Anything that scatters the light into a wide cone instead of a focused beam. The color matters too. Red-orange is the standard for a reason. It's visible against sky, against tarmac, against vegetation, against water. It doesn't blend into any natural background.
A prepper with a flashlight and a red diffuser cap has a ground-to-air signaling tool.
If you learn the three basic ICAO signals, arms raised for stop, arms waving horizontally for slow down, arms pointing forward for proceed, you can communicate with any pilot who's ever been through standard training. Which is essentially every commercial and military pilot on Earth.
Oh, stop, slow, go.
If you're signaling an aircraft in an emergency, those are the only three things you need to say. Come here, stop there, wait.
There's another practical detail you mentioned. The shoulder height thing.
If you watch marshallers at an airport, they always hold the wands at shoulder height or above, never below the waist. The reason is the pilot's eye line. In a typical commercial airliner, the cockpit windows are 15 to 20 feet off the ground. If the marshal holds the wands at waist level, the pilot has to look down, which means looking away from the horizon and the aircraft's path. Keeping the wands at shoulder height keeps them in the pilot's peripheral vision without forcing a head movement.
The entire physical vocabulary of marshalling is designed around the ergonomics of the cockpit.
Nobody notices this unless someone points it out. Next time you're at an airport, watch the ramp agents. The wand position, the stance, the way they pivot, it's all choreographed around the pilot's sight lines. Marshalling is a performance designed for an audience of one person sitting 40 feet away and 20 feet up.
That's the kind of detail that makes you realize how much invisible design is embedded in things we never think about.
The invisible design is what fascinates me. The marshalling stick looks like a simple tool, but it's the product of decades of iteration on materials, ergonomics, light physics, and international diplomacy. The diffuser material alone, the shift from glass to polycarbonate to silicone. Each material change affected the beam pattern, the durability, the weight, the cold weather performance. You can't use a glass diffuser on an aircraft carrier because it shatters if you drop it on the non-skid deck. You can't use polycarbonate in extreme cold because it gets brittle. Silicone solves both problems but costs more and has a different light transmission profile.
Somewhere there's an engineer at WOMTechnik who has spent 30 years thinking about nothing but diffuser materials.
I would love to have a beer with that person.
You absolutely would.
Let me go back to something I mentioned earlier because I think it deserves more attention. The IR marshalling application. This isn't just a niche military thing. The technology has implications for civilian emergency response. Imagine a search and rescue helicopter operating at night in a disaster zone. The ground team can use IR marshalling wands to guide the helicopter to a landing zone without creating a visible light signature that might attract attention or interfere with other operations. The pilot sees the signals clearly through NVGs. Everyone else sees darkness.
The wands themselves are indistinguishable from regular marshalling sticks. You could walk through an airport with one and nobody would know it had an IR mode.
Which is why they're controlled items in military supply chains. You don't just check these out of the equipment locker. But the underlying technology is increasingly accessible. IR LEDs are cheap now. Any hobbyist with a soldering iron could build an IR marshalling wand.
Which brings us to the future question. Where does this technology go from here?
One is automation. Airports are increasingly using autonomous ground vehicles, robotic tugs, self-driving baggage carts, automated jet bridges. In theory, a fully autonomous airport doesn't need human marshallers. The aircraft talks to the ground systems digitally, and the guidance happens without any glowing wands.
We both know that's not where this actually ends.
Right, because the second direction is the human backup. The U.S. Air Force is currently testing augmented reality marshalling, where marshallers wear AR glasses that overlay digital guidance cues, glide path indicators, distance measurements, alignment markers, onto their field of view. But the physical wands remain. The AR system augments the marshal's perception. It doesn't replace the communication channel. The sticks are still the sticks.
Because when the AR glasses crash, or the autonomous system loses GPS or someone jams the signal, you still need a person with two glowing wands who knows the signals.
The marshalling stick is the ultimate fallback. It's the communication system that works when everything else has failed. No power grid required beyond a battery. No network required. No software updates. No authentication tokens. Just light and a shared language.
Which is a pretty profound thing to say about a flashlight with a plastic cone on top.
The most profound technologies are often the ones that look trivial from the outside. That's kind of the theme of this entire show.
It really is. So to pull this together for the practical takeaways, if you want to be able to guide an aircraft in an emergency, learn three ICAO signals. Arms raised for stop, arms waving horizontally for slow down, arms pointing forward for proceed. Get a bright flashlight. Put a red or orange diffuser on it. Hold it at shoulder height. And you can communicate with any trained pilot on Earth.
If you're a prepper or a survivalist, the diffuser hack turns any flashlight into a ground-to-air signaling tool that's visible for miles. A frosted plastic bottle cap over a bright LED flashlight gives you a functional marshalling wand. It's not going to meet ICAO specifications, but in an emergency, it'll get the message across.
If you're just a person at an airport with a window seat, watch the ramp agents. Notice the wand height, the precision of the gestures, the choreography. There's a 40-hour training course and an 80-year history behind every wave of those glowing sticks.
There's one more detail worth mentioning. The world's largest manufacturer, WOMTechnik, started in 1952 making basically one product. They're still making basically one product 74 years later. There's something almost beautiful about a company that found its thing and just kept doing it.
The marshalling stick is the Toyota Land Cruiser of aviation equipment.
I was going to say the Bic pen, but the Land Cruiser works.
Now, Hilbert's daily fun fact.
In the 1920s, the Aral Sea was measured at roughly 26,000 square miles, about the size of Ireland. By 2020, it had shrunk to less than 4,000 square miles, meaning a phantom sea larger than Croatia essentially vanished from the map in a single human lifetime.
Right, right. Here's the open question. As airports automate, as autonomous tugs and robotic jet bridges become standard, do marshalling sticks survive? Or do they become a museum piece, a relic of the era when humans stood on the tarmac and talked to machines with light?
I think they persist. Not everywhere, not for every operation, but as the backup layer. The same way we still have manual overrides on automated systems. The marshalling stick is the manual override for ground aircraft guidance. And as long as there's a scenario where the automation fails, and there will always be that scenario, there will be someone on the tarmac with two glowing wands who knows the signals.
The simplest communication is the hardest to break. A light, a hand, a shared understanding.
That's the show right there.
Thanks to our producer, Hilbert Flumingtop. This has been My Weird Prompts. Find us at myweirdprompts.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
We'll be back with another one soon.
This episode's script was written by DeepSeek V4 Pro, with text-to-speech by Chatterbox.
Thanks for listening to our show, My Weird Prompts, where odd thoughts go. From sloth slow takes to facts on cue, we chase the strange and follow through. Some nights it's news, some nights it's lore, a thought you've never heard before. The host dig in, the host dig deep, the stranger the prompt, the less they sleep. From tiny questions, big ones too, from half-formed hunches to deja vu. If something odd is in your head, send it in, we'll chase the thread. My weird prompts, that's the close, from sloth, from man, from long ear host. Stay curious, keep weird in mind.